Hello and welcome to Film Stool. That's a good one. Mm. Film Stool. Well, if we watch a bad enough film, we can call it Film Stool for Dad.
Load of shit.
Yeah, that was a load of shit. That's right. Hello and welcome to Film School for Dad, the podcast where I attempt to catch my dad up on a lifetime of squandered interests and misappropriated activities that somehow managed to overlook almost all of popular culture. I'm Harvey.
And I'm Harvey's dad.
And each week we watch a movie that Dad hasn't seen but probably should have, and we get his opinion on whether or not it deserves its place in cinematic history. What are we discussing today, Dad? Can you say it?
No.
It's Eternal Sunshine for the Spotless Mind.
Right.
All right. So, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I'm assuming that you don't know much about this movie. Is that fair to say?
I've been told by a friend that it's a great movie and it's a love story.
Now, were you told this independent of, you were told this before I suggested that we should watch it, or?
A friend. I told him I was doing these podcasts.
Yep.
And generally what it involved.
Yeah.
And he volunteered this movie as his favorite of all time.
And what was it like coming out of the closet as a podcaster?
Well, obviously it's someone I know very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't tell everyone. I don't.
No. Anyway, the bottom line is that I've never heard of the film until very recently and know absolutely nothing about it.
Which is fair enough because it's a bit of an indie film, I think. But it did get really successful. As far as I know, it's very popular. As you were saying before, it makes a lot of the best film of all time lists. It makes a lot of people's personal lists. Mm. You know, it's very beloved. The people who are into it like it a lot. But even so, last week we spoke about picking a movie that I think is your kind of movie, and I don't know if this is your kind of movie. It's not what I have in my head when I think of your kind of movie, like what we were talking about at the time. So I'm not sure how this is going to go. I can't guarantee it's going to give you the warm and fuzzies you're looking for.
Well, only one way to find out.
Yeah, it should, but there's just a lot of distracting elements in there that I'm wondering if they'll turn you off before it has a chance. I hope not, though. I mean, I put it on a similar level to Memento and movies like that, is how complex the plot is and how well put together and well thought out it is.
So it'll require concentration?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's a bit to keep track of in a similar way to Memento, I suppose. But I don't want to spoil it by being too specific. I'll do the written intro. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind was a collaboration between Michelle Gondry and Charlie Kaufman, who by this time had worked together on a number of projects, two or three, I'm not really sure. And they were at the peak of this creative partnership. So for me, this is the best film they did together. They did a number of others that were more comedic, but this one tugs on the heartstrings a bit more, at least for me. The movie's famous for getting back to grassroots visual effects and camera trickery instead of having digital, you know, CGI effects. So there's a lot of clever visual stuff in it, but everything that you see is usually actually happening on set somewhere, right?
What year are we talking about?
2004 is the year. Mm-hmm. So it's fairly old. It's 15 years. Wow. I don't think it'll feel old though. It'll stand up as far as it still feels like a modern film. In fact, I think the style of this film set the tone for a lot of things to follow, like indie style film. You know what I mean when I say indie, like independent?
Oh, I see. Yes. Yeah.
So like sort of lower budget. They rely more on cheaper, more clever things as opposed to just throwing money at the movie and saying, okay, we can make anything happen.
Well, I don't even know the actors that you're referring to.
Well, they're not actors. Michelle Gondry's the director and right. Charlie Kaufman is the writer.
Okay.
Charlie right. Kaufman is probably my favorite writer of all time as for movies. And Michelle Gondry's got to be very close to being one of my favorite directors, although I think there are others that would top him off the list. But he'd be top 10, I think, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I actually wanted to do a Charlie Kaufman film with you, and I had to pick one. And when you mentioned Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, that was when I chose this one. I actually had another one in mind, which is much more comedic and zany. But then, yeah, when you came to me with this one, I was like, all right, it sounds like it's probably going to work better.
I get the impression you like zany.
Well, there aren't many zany films. When it comes to comedy, I like it big and I like it subtle, but I don't like much in the middle. Oh. So I like certain comedies that go really big. Like there's a movie called Anchorman with Will Ferrell. It's just ridiculous. They just break off and start singing and doing stupid stuff and saying weird things and acting strange. And it's just hilarious. But I prefer more subtle things, you know, like Ricky Gervais just did a new series on Netflix called Afterlife. And I wouldn't even necessarily call it a comedy. I mean, he's now just doing straight drama, I think. And it's just beautiful. It's just really, really good. That's the sort of thing, if we had the time, that would definitely get you for sure. In fact, I would rather be watching that with you than this if the goal is to find a movie that's going to make you cry and feel emotional, because that's, I'm going to be interested to see how this one turns out. It was released in a time when the romantic comedy was starting to become kind of stale and the same. So, you know, there were a lot of romantic comedies that had like Jennifer Aniston. I don't know. I'd had enough of her by now. She did a few good ones and most of them were just garbage. Eternal Sunshine is a romantic movie, but it's completely different from those kinds of movies. If you call this one a sitcom, I'll literally knock you out.
So are they well-known actors?
Yep. Jim Carrey, of course, you would have heard of. Known for comedic roles, but this one is not as comedic. This was his first serious role where he actually got to be a bit respected as a real actor. And Kate Winslet, who you would know from Titanic. Eternal Sunshine sort of, it does something that you've said that you didn't like in other films. That's what bothers me about it. It has a kind of science fiction premise at its center that wraps the whole romantic relationship study aspect of the movie, right? So it's essentially what it's about isn't what its story is. The story is a device to allow more elaborate exploration of romantic relationships, but the device comes first. So I worry that you'll see that and go, well, that's silly, and then not get actually immersed in the movie properly, because that's sort of what happened with Back to the Future, right? It was like the time travel thing kind of distracted you, so you can't really get into the movie, right?
Yes, it was.
And the tone and the acting and the Libyan terrorists.
The Libyan terrorists, absolutely, was pretty hard to take seriously. But this is not a science fiction movie.
I would say it's got a science fiction element and that's it. I wouldn't call it a science fiction movie. It's got some technology in it, that's all. That sort of is the cornerstone of the story, of the plot. But I don't think it would. Well, I don't know how you would do the movie without it, but I don't think it's a particularly important aspect of the movie either. So I don't know. I'm going to be really curious.
You've got me intrigued.
Is it, this made you curious, has it? Mm. Oh, that's good, I guess. All right, let's do it. Well, we just watched Eternal Sunshine for the Spotless Mind. Can you say the title now?
Eternal Sunshine for the Spotless Mind.
There you go. See, there's progress there. I get the sense you're a bit exhausted, so.
Well, I am. I'm exhausted.
And understandable. It's one of those movies that doesn't follow a chronological narrative structure or any kind of classical structure at all, really, for that matter, I think. So it's difficult to keep track of, kind of like Memento was. Did you find it tougher than Memento?
Yes.
Really? Okay. So what are your initial thoughts then as far as?
I just found that an incredible amount of concentration was required to try and work out what the hell was going on.
Sure.
And I've largely failed in that regard.
All right.
So I was forever behind because I didn't feel I'd ever fully grasped what it was about. Having said that, I wanted to like it. It made me feel like I should. I felt that Jim Carrey was absolutely stunning in the way he performed that character, and Kate Winslet was also very good, but I found Jim Carrey particularly good.
Mm.
So I wanted to engage and get involved, but my mind was just racing to catch up all the time, trying to figure out what the hell was going on.
Yes, it's a bombardment of the senses and the intellect, which, as I said, similar to Memento, I guess it's more challenging. I don't really remember the first time I saw it clearly enough to say whether it is.
Memento's more structured than that.
Well, no, I think there might be a missing piece, which is key to the structure that you might have missed towards the start or whatever. That because you said it was jumping back and forward in time, which it does, but the key to the narrative structure is the stuff that's from the past. Is him going through the erasure process in his mind, right? So he's going on a journey through his memories in reverse chronological order, give or take, although they do jump back to his childhood and stuff.
I sort of got that.
So that's a loose narrative structure there where it doesn't have to be completely chronological, but he has to be in the spot where they're erasing the memory. So he keeps remembering things with Clementine, which were the areas of the brain that he was focused on, and they're his memories. It's not real experiences. So he can interact with the memory in a way that you can't interact in real life, as in he could be in two places at once talking to himself from the past.
I sort of got all that, but found it impossible to really take it in.
Well, you just know when the crazy stuff starts happening, like when books start disappearing on the shelves, that you're in his memory.
Falling down and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
I know, yeah. I was in his memory then.
Okay, so you haven't missed anything then?
Well, no, I felt that I understood what it was doing.
Yeah.
But I just found it stressful to watch.
It is a bit stressful, yeah. Hmm. But I think the emotional core of it is what's important about that movie. That's why I said at the start, I feel like you might get distracted with that device of the memory being erased and not be prepared when that emotional call comes, which for me is the moment where Clementine and Joel have to say goodbye to each other in his memory anyway, you know. But that bit of letting go, I think, is really where the movie becomes emotional. But if you're not there, you know, if you're not in the moment, I guess, because you're distracted by
I'm not sure what stuff. Was actually happening.
Well, that was their last memory. They were erasing the memories backwards, and that was the last time the last memory they had together, which was getting erased. So that's why that last thing, you know, the house was falling down and all that stuff.
Mm.
So I don't know. I find that a really nice idea.
That was the last memory getting erased.
Yes.
To bring us to what?
So it brings us back to what you saw at the start, which is that conversation on the train.
Yeah.
And they kind of have a connection anyway, even though they have no memory of each other.
Right. So that was my guess, that the start was actually the two of them with erased memories meeting again.
For the first time, yeah.
Right.
He goes to Montauk, which is what she says to him at the very end. He's not sure why. He just feels compelled to change trains. So
they do it all over again.
Yeah, but they do it having heard the tapes of each other and how it's going to end up this time, but they decide to do it anyway, which is kind of a romantic idea, or maybe not.
They heard the tapes of each other bagging one another.
That's right. So they know all of their flaws going into it. They know how they're going to feel about each other after, I guess it's a year or whatever it is.
But let's do it anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, well, I sort of got that.
And, you know, the idea that you can't erase love, as corny as that sounds, I think is the heart of the movie, I would say.
Right.
Which is a very nice idea, don't you think?
I wouldn't have thought you could erase anything much.
Well, we could get into the science of whether or not that would work. I think it's a very clever way to portray the idea.
It's like you can erase a memory, but you don't erase the love.
That's right, yeah.
Well, that's a bit fanciful.
Yeah, it's a bit corny, but it's also, you know, it's a pretty nice idea.
Well, it is.
Isn't it?
So why did it feel so exhausting to get that message across?
I don't know. I guess.
Why did you feel, as I did, that you were watching something that was really well done, but you were really struggling to enjoy it because I couldn't keep up?
Well, I don't remember feeling that way the first time I watched it. So I don't know if that's universal. I think probably the people who say it's their favorite movie of all time wouldn't have felt that way. So whatever cinematic training they might have had. I mean, look, non-chronological films were less common in the past than they are these days, right? Like the last 20 years, you've had a lot of them. Pulp Fiction, which was one of the ones on your top 100 list, is one of the sort of famous non-chronological films. Memento was all backwards, so I suppose in a sense it's simpler.
That's what I said, it was more structured.
But even that's hard work, right, the first time around?
Oh, yeah, it was hard work. There's a difference between hard work and exhausting, though.
Yeah,
it required concentration, Memento.
Yeah, that's right.
You wouldn't want to have missed 10 minutes of it. It developed, which I found could follow logically, but I never felt in control of my understanding of this.
I don't think it wants you to feel in control so much.
Yeah, but I want to feel in control.
But as I say, isn't this
I'm trying to enjoy a movie.
Well, yeah, that's true. But it shows a difference between modern audiences, right? Like a Hitchcock film, when I watch it now, it's remarkably slow, very easy to follow. Mm. There's plot twists. You see them coming a mile off because 100 movies since have done it, right? Yeah. So there's a process of...
There's something to be said for that, though.
For it being slow?
Well,
not if it feels slow.
Not for it being slow, but for it being able to be followed and even partly predictable. There's something to be said for that because you
sometimes
can sit back and enjoy it.
Yeah, but well, that's true. Yeah, it's not.
So
it's not
I just felt I've watched a very fine acting performance in particular, and no doubt a fine production in every respect.
Mm.
But because I never really grasped it, or if I did grasp it, it was sort of after the event all the time. That must have been what it was or whatever without being sure.
Mm.
That reduces the enjoyment of it to me.
I remember that, never feeling 100% sure.
Mm.
It's not comfortable. Like it's not a movie that makes you comfortable.
Well,
it's not
creepy.
Familiar.
It's creepy in some ways.
It's got plenty of creepy bits in it.
Yeah.
It's disturbing, at the idea of someone having their brain damaged, as he says in the movie, you know, having their mind, their memories erased.
And being done as routinely as was being suggested.
Yeah. No, it is. It's
that it was like the point they were trying to make was that everyone would like this to happen with someone. That's almost the way I took it.
Yeah.
Everyone would have something they wanted to have erased.
Because everybody has scars from their past.
Yeah. Well, the fact of life is that, in my experience, people's own mind takes care of that for them. We all suppress.
Not everybody.
We all suppress nasty memories, unpleasant memories, things we don't want to remember.
Well, that's becoming less and less true. So the prevalence of things like anxiety, panic attacks, people getting onto drugs and medication that try to control their thoughts.
But the idea of
increasing.
But the idea of it being done by some hairy creep and sort of second rate digs in the sort of inner suburbs is
horrific. You know,
yeah.
No, very much so. I think the movie is clearly saying it's not giving a positive review of that kind of technology. It's a warning about technology, as most technological movies are.
Mm.
But at the same time, you know, I still feel the emotional core of the movie is that idea that connection is special. You can't erase it, and it's worth giving it a go, even though it's not perfect.
Mm. Mm.
And I think that's nice. And it also gives people more options. If you're looking for that one true love all the time, you probably end up alone, right?
If you meet someone and feel particularly familiar towards them right from the start, all you have to do is say, look, I guess we've probably met before and our memories have been erased. Have you seen
Eternal Sunshine,
for the Spotless Mind, you know? And that could become a great pickup line, actually.
Yeah, that's true. It'll be a bit of a barrier to you not being able to remember the title.
Well, I'll have to practice.
Yeah, you'll have to write it on a chalkboard 100 times or something.
Not that I'm in that phase of my life of doing too much picking up.
Yeah, no, I think it's a masterful piece of filmmaking in many ways. Like the visuals, obviously.
Well, it is.
Just never seen anything like that. And there's no excuse to put it on the screen any other way.
It is visually quite extraordinary, yeah.
I found some mind-blowing stuff when I got the DVD. And it had a lot of special features. One of the things they pointed out was there's a bit where she's walking on the street and he's driving along in the car. I don't know if you remember, and a car just falls out of the sky and things are just disappearing and stuff. And while she's walking, one of her legs is missing and you don't even notice during the thing, but they took the time to erase one of her legs.
Well, as in the memory.
Yeah, as in that part of her, part of the memory's being erased. And it's just, I can't think of another excuse to put that kind of a visual in a movie where it would actually make sense. In a way, it's a negative for the movie, but they have a lot of fun with the idea. You know, the bit where he's in his childhood and he's acting like a kid for me, that stuff is the weak stuff of the movie. I actually wanted it to be just more drama, just more of the romance stuff, because there aren't many good romantic movies, I find. You and I both like The Bodyguard. That's a fairly romantic movie, but it's a bit cheesy. You know, it's a bit standard Hollywood fare.
Yeah, it's a good movie, nice romantic storyline and brilliant music.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the music definitely helps. Yeah. How'd you find the music in Eternal Sunshine for the Spotless Mind?
Well, I like the theme song.
Yeah, that one that plays at the end.
Yeah, and the start. And the rest of it I didn't notice much.
That is exactly right. I think you don't. There's some really offbeat music in the movie, though, which you kind of,
I mean, obviously,
you feel
that,
it
when that creep and the receptionist were dancing over Jim Carrey lying there with his headset on,
getting his brain.
There was obviously music going on at that point, which no doubt was credited, but I mean, I didn't even notice what it was.
I have no idea, to be honest. It's just mindless rock music. I think, you know, it's probably called that.
I had a look at it at the end, and none of it seemed familiar to me.
Yeah, I don't even know that that main theme. Have you heard that before?
Oh, yes, I've heard that song before.
I think I only know it from the movie.
I've definitely heard that on the radio.
I read an interesting thing when I was doing very brief research before you arrived, and they were talking about that first scene on the train and how originally when they were trying to score it, they were trying to play bits of music in between the silence, and it just wasn't working. There was, and the director, Michel Gondry, just said, just do the opposite. Just do the opposite of what you're doing. So he started playing the music over the top of their voices, and then when they had awkward pauses, the music disappears, which is like the opposite of what you would normally do. And I watched it this time knowing that, and it's so effective. It's amazing, because it makes that whole exchange just so uncomfortable.
That whole opening scene is captivating.
Yeah, it is. It's a shame. It's a shame that the rest of the movie didn't quite work for you, because
well, up to the credits, I thought it was going to be brilliant.
That's really interesting. Maybe a second viewing would change your mind, because you wouldn't have to race to catch up as much, knowing what you know.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I almost certainly would enjoy it more, because I wouldn't be straining to that degree to understand it.
Yeah,
but. But you shouldn't have to watch a movie twice.
Some movies are good twice.
Oh, but I'm not saying they're not good. I'm saying you shouldn't have to watch it twice to enjoy it, because by definition, if you really struggle with something the first time, you're not going to invest in it again. So
won't you?
I'll watch something I've really enjoyed again.
But what if you have the promise that you'll enjoy it more the second time?
I'm not doing it as a critic. I'm doing it because recreation.
You are kind of a critic now.
Oh, well, seeing as you've invited me on this podcast, which is good, because I'm seeing some movies and it's interesting to see them.
Yeah.
Whether I like them or not is really not the point.
You weren't bored though, right? I mean, couldn't
absolutely
possibly be bored.
Not. Yeah. That's what I said. I was riveted to the thing trying to follow it. I wanted to like it. I really tried hard to like it because I felt it inherently looked like something I should be liking. But I just struggled to understand it contemporaneously with what was happening. I was catching up all the time.
Yeah, that must have been frustrating. I do think there are some movies that are designed to be watched twice. That's probably one of them. I've seen it multiple times. I don't get bored. The second, third, fifth, 16th time.
I would have another crack at it. I'm not.
I'm not saying tomorrow. I'm saying in 2 years' time, if it came up again.
No, absolutely, I'd have another crack at it. I'm not. Yeah. It doesn't come into the category of something I wouldn't want to see again.
Yeah.
It hasn't left me feeling fulfilled.
No. There's certain movies though that that have two layers that you can only understand on a second viewing. So Eternal Sunshine's one of those, but a more obvious type is like a thriller that has a twist ending that changes everything that you've seen before. And I've got an example of a movie like that. If you want to see it, we could include it on the roster. It's a classic thriller type movie, horror thriller, I guess, but possibly more of a thriller. It'd be interesting to see how you would react to it. It's not taxing, but when you get, I don't want to spoil it, but when you get to the end, it forces you to reevaluate everything that you've seen. And that type of movie I really like. It's rewatchable. You know, you can go back and say, oh, I understand why that scene was like that, or this scene was like this.
I think you probably need to run something a bit simpler past me in the meantime.
We can do that. Yeah. Mm. I did have an alternative plan for today. So we'll just do that next time.
Mm.
The idea was I was going to pick a movie that I thought was guaranteed that would be the type of movie that you would like.
Mm.
I'd still like to have a crack at that.
Mm.
This kind of got hijacked because you got this one recommended. That's it was already right on the list. Mm. So I thought, okay, we'll try it. You know, I think this is, I mean, I don't want to call it like advanced cinema, but it's advanced cinema as in if that was the first movie you ever saw, it would just be gibberish most likely, right? Like you sort of need to understand the cinematic language and to know what to look for.
Well, that raises an interesting point. Was it successful at the box office?
I think it, well, I don't know about the box office. Let's have a look. But
well, did it make money? That's after all the artistic stuff, that's why they actually make these movies.
Yeah. So top rated movies, number 88 of all time on IMDb. It won an Oscar and got another 71 wins and 109 nominations. See more awards. Let's see what the specifics were. It won an Oscar probably for the script, I would imagine. Best Writing Original Screenplay, got the Oscar for.
Mm-hmm.
Nominated for Best Actress for Kate Winslet.
Mm-hmm.
Got nominated for Best Actor, Jim Carrey, Best Actress, Best Screenplay, Best Motion Picture, Comedy or Musical. That's the Golden Globes.
Right, so it got similar highly things recognized at that level.
Critically recognized.
What yeah about at the box office? Did people go and see it? Because my guess would be not.
Let's see.
The mere fact I'd never heard of it makes me skeptical that it would.
There's plenty of movies that you haven't heard of, though, that they're just kind of outside of your circle, right? They're not, you know, it's like Jurassic Park. Like, why would you hear about Jurassic Park? I mean, you might see an ad, but you'd probably go and take a piss while it's on. Yeah, true.
I had heard of it. I just hadn't seen it.
All right. Box office. Total domestic gross. That's domestic in the US because the US is the only country in the world and you know it. 34,400,301. I don't know what the budget for the movie
is. I was going to say that's not a huge figure, is it?
No, and foreign similar, so 37, 38 million.
I mean, it's made money, clearly, but it's not a huge smash hit.
No, I wouldn't call it a smash hit, but it's a lower budget movie. It wouldn't have been, you know, it's not a Marvel movie or whatever. Production budget, 20 million, so it didn't double its money.
Mm.
It probably made 30% on top or something like that. So, yeah, I'd call that disappointing given the quality of the movie. But I think, you know, on DVD and stuff, it probably made its money back. It's quite a sort of a bit of a fan favorite, a bit of a cult classic.
Well, yes, it's gone on.
Yeah, it's definitely gone on.
Mm-hmm.
It's consistently, I mean, I always put it in my, you know, sort of top 10, top 20 type of numbers. But strangely,
and why do you rate it that highly?
Just because I think generally romance is done in a very cheesy way.
Mm.
And I think that one, it presents it not just in a sort of grounded way. I know grounded's a weird word for such a highfalutin, complicated movie with all those moving parts. But to me, the emotional core of it's very simple. And it's presented just delightfully, if if I could put it that way.
Yeah, all that's true. And there wasn't a lot of, we didn't get a lot of background on the characters, did we?
You don't really need it, though. I think they're to some extent, I mean, you know Joel's shy and withdrawn.
Well, we found out what his character's like.
And
we got a few hints why from the bits that popped out of the memory. But
it's more about the two of them together, not them separately. They don't exist outside of each other. That's I think, part of what the movie is saying. How they bounce off each other and the contrast between the two of them is very clear. Mm. She's very whimsical and, you know, takes chances. He's very safe and very shy.
Mm. Mm.
You know, she has purple hair. He has the same hairstyle through the whole thing. He wears conservative clothing.
Shaggy dog look, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And she's all, you know, colorful and, you know, different styles. And, I mean, I think the contrast between the two of them is all they cared about in that movie. I don't think it really matters who they were before they met.
Mm.
You know, you get a bit of history about him being engaged and stuff, but that's all just about him being the safe guy, right? The guy who's just following the standard path.
Well, who says that there's nothing interesting about him?
Yeah, that's right. Constantly says that. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, just in case you missed it, he'll just say it out loud. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but even that, I don't know how they get away with it because on paper I would have read that and gone, oh, get rid of that line. That's just too. But it's fine the way he does it, I think, anyway. I didn't, it just doesn't bother me.
No, it's certainly in character.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably what he would say.
It doesn't clash.
No, no. And for me, okay, here's what I think is special about the movie. This is more focused on what I really feel about it. It shows you a portrayal of a relationship, and it makes you feel like a relationship feels. I don't know if you've had a relationship like that, a more sort of like volatile, unpredictable one, but that kind of relationship, more the type of relationship you have in your youth. One particular girlfriend of mine, who I'm sure you can pinpoint without us naming her, just felt like that movie all the time. And it, in a lot of ways, it brought me back to that, which isn't necessarily a good thing, but it educated me retrospectively.
Isn't that a commentary on the Kate Winslet's character rather than on the relationship, though?
I think it's all about the relationship. Mm. It is for me anyway. When I watch it, that's what I'm focused on.
I certainly recognize that manic personality.
Yeah, yeah. Just between you and me, Dad, most women are like that, aren't they? Hey? Those crazy ladies.
Not your mother.
No, no. Oh, maybe a little bit more in her older age. She'll find it, I think. She's looking for it. Yeah, she's looking for it. Maybe. We'll see. She doesn't listen to these, does she?
I'll make sure she doesn't hear this one.
Yeah, right. Good. Yeah, make sure. Give her an internet blackout just at the right moment. So, yeah, that's what it is for me. It's the portrayal of the relationship is the most realistic, emotional thing that I've experienced in film. I think there might be a few others, but you can't get that from "He's Looking at You, Kid," right? Like, not to go back and insult a movie I haven't seen, but you can't get it from that kind of standard Hollywood cinema. There has to be a shaky camera. There has to be buildings falling down randomly for no reason. There just has to be that kind of stuff, because that's how it feels when you're in it.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean, and therefore the treatment of the subject is what draws out that raw nature of the relationship.
Yeah,
in a way that just telling the story straight can't do.
No, that's right. You know, boy meets girl, they fall in love. Yeah. They erase each other from each other's memory. Yeah, no, they fall in love again.
I can see that.
Yeah. And to some extent, it validates your experience of the film, the confusion of it and the lack of certainty. And all of that is part of the emotional experience, right? You didn't happen to enjoy it, which I understand. There's been relationships that I've been in where I felt like that and haven't enjoyed it either.
Well, it was much too hard work to describe it as enjoyment.
Whew, tell me about it. Sorry, no, you're talking about the movie now. Yes, aren't you? Yeah. 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 It can be hard work, though, watching movies. Whew. I've watched some difficult movies before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. But we don't really disagree on anything other than whether we like it or not. So
it's not a liking it or not is not actually the question. For me, it's a matter to what degree did I enjoy it. And my enjoyment suffered from the effort required to watch it. That's a summary of it. I felt I wanted to like it. I felt it was clearly being very well done. I felt the acting was outstanding, and it was interesting, intriguing. I didn't drop off my concentration, but it was bloody hard work trying to.
Fatiguing.
Keep up. Yeah.
So maybe this will be something, and possibly this is a flaw in how we're doing this, but maybe this is something that needs a bit of reflection. Maybe deciding whether you like it or not immediately after you finish watching it is a flawed concept. That maybe, in fact, I'm almost certain this movie sort of snuck up on me a little bit as well. I'm not sure if I walked away saying it was the best thing I've ever seen. Yeah, I probably didn't.
It's a very good point, because sometimes you do find yourself thinking about some movies, you haven't realized that you've actually enjoyed them as much as you have, or that they've engaged you as much as they have. And you often find yourself thinking of them weeks later. Theme songs go through your head and all that sort of thing. And you remember scenes and what have you. Not always, in a logical or connected way, but it just, some movies sort of haunt you, I suppose.
Yeah.
This one may well do that. I don't know.
Well,
it is hard to tell. The similar type of thing, Memento, certainly hasn't haunted me. None of the others that we've watched so far have.
I wouldn't expect Back to the Future haunt anyone.
No, I haven't got scenes from that racing through my mind.
No.
We'll wait and see with this one.
All right. Well, we'll get a rating.
This was the best acting in...
This was closest to the type of movie that you might have liked.
Yeah.
But I told you at the start, I knew there was just some elements of it that wouldn't necessarily be to your taste.
Like the point the credits came up, I thought I was going to love it.
Yeah, it does have a very strong opening. Mm. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, I mean, to some extent, it'd be interesting to see the version of the movie where it just continues with that more straightforward narrative. Mm. You know, where you just see in sequence, she has a bad day, goes and erases him, and he erases her for revenge, and then just chronologically it goes through. You'd miss a lot of the visual stuff. I don't know if you have to be a film buff to enjoy that kind of visual stuff, but there's a lot in there that's just mind-blowingly clever.
Mm.
Visuals that have never been done before and never had a reason to be done.
Instinctively, it looked clever.
Yeah, you noticed it when they're in the library in the books.
Like watching a good magician, I can't understand how it's done.
But I don't know how some of it was done either. No. I'll tell you how one thing was done that I saw in the behind-the-scenes stuff before we get your rating.
Mm.
There's a bit where Kate Winslet is walking slightly behind him in the street, and all of a sudden she starts going out of focus and becoming kind of misty, like,
yes, yeah,
like she's being faded out. You'd say that's a digital effect.
Mm.
It's not. There's a guy following him with a pane of misted glass put in between them. So the bit where she's fading out is probably digital.
Mm.
And then when they cut to them talking, there's just some guy holding a piece of glass in front of her to maintain that effect. And it just, when I saw that in the making of, I was like, I wouldn't have even thought of doing that.
Mm.
Why? Just do it digitally. It's easier than thinking of that. But Michelle Gondry is notorious for doing that kind of stuff and just loves everything to be practical. You know, they built that whole house so they could move the rooms around. So the bits where he's trying to look for her and she's disappearing, that's a real scene of him walking around.
Mm.
And in some cases, you know, he does a quick costume change to be his other self.
Yeah.
Like they don't do a whip pan and fake it. He's just like taking his hat off or whatever he has to do, switching positions really quickly. Mm. So amazing stuff. Anyway, let's get your rating with a provision that you can revise it next time.
It's a very hard one to rate.
Yeah.
Because if I rated it on enjoyment alone, it would be just a pass mark. But because it engaged me so strongly and because the acting enthralled me, I'll go 7.
7's pretty good.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'll go 7.
I think when you reflect on it too, you'll feel that's probably about the right rating.
Mm.
I would hope. Yeah. So that's more of a predictive rating.
Okay. No, I think that's a rationale for the rating rather than an instinctive one.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the experience of watching it as against enjoying it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. That's why I think if you think about it retrospectively, you might find it it sneaks up on you a little bit. You feel better about it overall.
Yeah.
I find for some reason, sometimes I need to have a dream about something to work it out in my head. Mm. Happens in my work all the time, sometimes with movies like that where...
That's a bit of a worry.
Yeah, it's pretty weird, but that's my subconscious working out how to come to terms with something complicated. Yeah. And then when I wake up, I'm okay.
Mm.
So. Maybe that'll happen to you. We've got same genetics.
Okay. Maybe it will. I'll let you know.
All right. Well, thanks for doing it, Dad. Next time, I promise, it'll be a really simple, straightforward, chronological narrative.
Something that I can just enjoy and then think about later rather than have to think my way through.
All right. Cool. Mm. Yeah, it's pretty tough watching a complicated movie and then having to talk about it immediately afterwards.
Yeah.
It's half the fun though, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. We'll do it again in a week's time.
Okay.
All right. Cheers, Dad.
Okay.
See ya.
As I say, it's definitely working for you to show off your knowledge anyway.
Well, I take notes. It's not like it's all off the top of my head.
Well, it comes out pretty much like it is.
Well, that's the trick, isn't it?
Mm.
Pretend to be knowledgeable. So many podcasts and YouTube videos and whatever, they talk to an audience as if they're an expert, but really what they do is they research something and then present it as if they're an expert. Mm. But real experts have like a breadth of knowledge across dozens of years, right?
Experience, yeah.
And they've done real research, like with books in a library and talking to real people who are actually there. And it really annoys me, the talking down to an audience as if all you did was research on the internet. You just looked at Wikipedia. Anyone can sound like an expert, right?
Mm.
It just annoys
me.
These
days, these days.
Yeah, so I try not to do that. I try to make it like a journey of understanding for me too, which it is. I mean, like I don't read something and then present it.
It's like you're thinking out loud.
Yeah, that's what I try to do.
Well, what I'm saying though is they'd get a fair bit of information out of it.
Oh yeah, well that's
all from you, none from me.
Got to put your little trivia tidbits in there and stuff. Mm. Well, we'll do. What was the one that you just said before? I reckon we should do that. Or maybe Casablanca or one of the ones that you say is a gap in my knowledge. We should do that movie and just reverse roles. You do the research, ask me questions
after we've done a few more, though, because we haven't established